welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech. This is the Investor Resources live radio program. And if you want to talk to us, the number is 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770.
I'm back, Don. We're good to go.
Okay. I was a little lost here. I wasn't even getting any feedback on my end. Couldn't hear anything but me.
Yeah, anyway. It was me. Yeah, so.
Okay. Well, so obviously it's a live program when things don't work right.
Yeah,
if it
go.
Was pre-recorded, all of that would have been worked
we
out.
We would have cut that out, yeah.
That's right. So if you want to talk to us, we are both here. The number is 800-465-8770. We are here to talk about the markets, stock and bond market, inflation, things that affect the market, your portfolio. If you've got questions about something in it or something that has been suggested that should be in it, we might have an opinion that we can offer, something else for you to cogitate on and decide whether it's suitable for you or not.
There you go.
Anyway, it's 800-465-8770. We do have our monthly webinar is scheduled for May 7th, 9 o'clock in the morning. That is a Saturday, so you kind of get to sleep in, get a cup of coffee, and sit back and log into your computer if you have the connections. You put it up on your flat screen and drink your coffee, eat your croissant or a donut or whatever else you're munching on that hour of the day, and get a little bit smarter about what's going on in the markets. All you have to do is register at IRIradio.com. IRIRadio.com. A couple of clicks and your email. Your name and your email, and we will send you a link to join us. If you cannot join us because something else comes up on May 7th, we'll send you a replay link, and you'll be able to watch it on your own schedule. And for those of you who do watch it, you'll be able to watch it as many extra times as you want to be sure you get full benefit of everything that we pass out, the content of which is absolutely unknown until the Friday before the show.
It really is. We put that together at the end of the week to make sure that we're up to date on everything that's going on. And if anything big comes up, we want to make sure and get it in there so we can talk about it.
So one of the things we are going to cover is the market, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And kind of interesting with some of the prep work that you did for us, Perry, regarding one of the things that people want is a natural function of growing up, becoming adults, and usually takes place long before we're adults, something that shows up in two-year-olds. They want control.
Yeah, definitely. Especially two-year-olds. You are correct.
And, that's something that doesn't seem to go away as we move into adulthood. We want control. And we start investing in the market, and generally, we want control. But when it comes to the stock market, the market, Mr. Market, as Warren Buffett refers to him, is boss.
All the time. As much as we want control and as many things as we can produce data-wise to pretend that we're leading the market and knowing what's going on, it's the market. It's always the market that's in control, and it's up to us to do something with it. But it's important to remember, like I said, Don, we're not in control of what's going on in the market ever.
So the issue is, what are you going to do about it? And the general approach, what are considered best practices today, is to use modern portfolio theory and just diversify across asset classes. And everybody knows that diversification is safety. Well, that's an assumption.
So goes the story, right?
It's a little hard to prove, but it is the assumption. So it's the old adage, you put all your eggs in one basket and keep your eye on it. but otherwise put them in different baskets because they're not all going to fall over at the same time. If you fall, some of them will survive. But be that as it may, when it comes to the market, markets are dynamic. Yet modern portfolio theory says that doesn't matter. We don't know how to adapt to dynamic, so we'll just own a bunch of everything that we can in broad categories. The larger the portfolio, the more options we have, more choices we have. But we're just basically going to buy stuff because we know over time it's worked out.
Now that's, you got to take a second, everybody, and listen to what Don just said. That is so important. They don't care if you have that pie chart portfolio. Whoever gave that to you does not care what's going on in the market. They don't care if the market's dropping like a rock. They don't care if a war broke out in Europe. They don't care if inflation's out of control. None of that stuff is looked at as part of anything that should go into a portfolio decision. The only thing that goes into the decision is the last 80 years of historic returns. Nothing else. We think that's dangerous. We don't think it's okay to say the world changes quickly, it changes dramatically, and we're just going to ignore that. I don't see how anyone looks at that and says, that's a good idea with my retirement money. I hope people ignore, you know, what's going on today and just plow ahead regardless of conditions. But that's what happens with the pie chart.
And if you're kind of just getting started in the investment arena, it can be confusing. I had breakfast with a younger man this morning who's had to step into his parents' affairs, and he's trying to figure out what's the responsible thing to do. And he's asking me these questions like, I've talked to these multiple firms, and they all sound the same. I mean, I answer right. these questions over and over and over again, and everything they recommend, it looks pretty much like the same stuff. So what's the real deal here? Well, and Perry, you just mentioned the things we can't control. We can't control the war. We can't control the Fed policy. We can't control whether consumers are buying a lot of discretionary things that are not essential, but they're fun to have, they're
right,
desirous.
Right.
Or if they're worried about their cash flow and maybe inflation, which they can't control, so now they're worried, can we afford groceries and gasoline and still get the kids to school? I mean, that's a different issue. We can't control any of that stuff. And so from an MPT, modern portfolio theory standpoint, it really doesn't matter. We just are going to buy some staples. We're going to buy some discretionary. We're going to buy some healthcare. Some, we'll have some technology. Oh, and we've got to have emerging markets because they're cheap. And that was a different discussion that I had on Friday. So the point here is that most portfolios don't adapt to market changes. Now, they say, yes, we do. We rebalance your portfolio.
Yeah.
We sell your winners and buy your losers. That's what rebalancing is. That forces you to buy cheap. But maybe cheap is going to get even cheaper, which means you're still going to sell what winners you have to buy even more things that aren't working. And that takes me to the emerging market deal, which was on Friday. Now, if you've been a listener for some time, you know that I train other advisors around the country on how to read, how to work with current data using technical input and charts. And so we're looking for things that make sense. Where's leadership? We like owning leaders. Are they doing the top of the performance in recent time, or are they laggards where they're losing money? And that's where this emerging market issue comes up. And by the way, if you want to call us, we have an open phone line. Got to wake Ben up. He's probably sleeping in there. 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Anyway, so I have this new advisor back in Pennsylvania, and I said, show me what you've got. Tell me where he is. What are the issues that you really want some help with? And reluctantly he says, well, I own emerging markets. I said, well, that makes sense. And then what'd you buy them? Well, they've been undervalued for a long time. I said, that's right. That's been the mantra. In fact, I pulled this thing back up. Emerging markets have been undervalued since 14 or 15.
Right.
I mean, that's a long time ago.
And the people buying them will tell you, well, no, it's not that we're wrong. We're just early. It's going to be okay. It'll all work out. And eventually it probably will, but it might be 20 years. Why be in a losing position for the next two decades because you think it's going to work out at some point? It doesn't make any sense.
So right after COVID, it did have a run up, which quickly faded.
Right.
And so if we go back and look at 15, basically emerging markets have been undervalued and have not made a single but very brief intermittent contribution to your portfolio return. If you have them in your portfolio, which if you have a standard diversified best practices portfolio, you probably have emerging markets
in
there.
You've got them, you bet.
And we ask, why? And so in this individual's case, this portfolio guy's case, he's got a position that how do I get out of this? I'm down. I'm 25% in the hole in my emerging markets position. That's a problem. Now, not everybody's 25% in the hole. I mean, his was a bad timing decision on it, but they were undervalued when he bought them. They are still undervalued. They were undervalued 6-7 years ago. How long will it be before these actually contribute to a gain in your portfolio? And the answer is we don't know.
Completely unknown. Yeah. Unknowable. Yeah.
So our response is now's not the time to own them. Why do you force something into your portfolio that is consistently, in this case, 5, 6 years, 7 years, not making a significant contribution towards your goals?
Sure. And even if you've made a bad decision, you know, if it's a very old saying, if you find yourself at the bottom of a hole, at least stop digging. You know, just yes, you're down. You're not going to get it back there. So you can at least get rid of that, get it out of your portfolio and get it somewhere where you might have some recovery. But it's probably not going to be there right now. So don't just hang on in the blind hope that at some point it's going to come back. It can cost you too much money. Too much money. It's not worth that risk.
And then the common response among investors and many financial advisors, including this one in Pennsylvania, was, well, shouldn't I hang on until I get even?
Right, which is very common. Like you said, Don, if something's down, it's like, well, I got to hang on until I get even. And if you're up, you can't sell it because of the tax consequences. So the only stock you can ever sell is something that hasn't changed in value. That's not good. That's not good policy. Ever. It's not good policy. You have to identify, does this look like it's got potential or not? And if it doesn't, cut your losses as quick as you can and move on to something that's stronger. And that's really the only choice you have. We are going to choose to get out of here right now. We're up against our first break of the afternoon. I'd like to remind everyone, Saturday, May 7th, we have our next market update scheduled. That's at 9 a.m. on Saturday, May 7th. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give the registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back. And then on May 7th, you can click that link. You will be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts that we're talking about. We're going to give you an outlook of what we see going on in the market at the current time, and we always have plenty of time to answer your questions. So if you have questions about the market, about investing, about individual securities, it's a great time to get a second opinion on your strategy or your individual holdings. You can register again for that at iriradio.com. We are live here this afternoon. If you'd like to talk to us, we'd love to talk to you about anything involved with the economy or investing. The number is 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
One thing that the market requires is constant attention. And to assume that you can turn around and just buy something and sit on it, well, that's a pretty common practice.
Sure.
I mean, it's buy and hold is that. We have a client, California client, who had been using Motley Fool and buying individual stocks for a couple of decades. And because he was watching his parents' account, who we had managed for a couple of decades, after COVID, he said, I don't know how you guys did that. Like, look at my, will you look at my stuff? Which we did, sure. So we did do that. And I, when I called him back, I said, so I don't understand why this particular security has declined 30% and you haven't done anything with it.
Doesn't seem like a good idea, right?
So I said, so he explained to me how he's been buying his stocks. I mean, he's just basically relying on the buy recommendations out of Motley Fool. And he's got some good stocks. So they do some good research. And so my curiosity was, so when do they tell you to sell these things? He says, oh, they don't.
There you go.
No, we just buy. That's all we do. We just buy. And we sit on them. So, and he still had large gain in it. And I said, so, okay, so I know you have a large gain, but your gain was substantially larger about 5-6 months ago. And that doesn't bother you that you just gave up. You're getting close to retirement. You just gave up a really big chunk of money and you don't care. Well, he thought about it and decided he did care.
Of course, right?
Maybe there's some other things that need to be taken into consideration. And to some extent, it's kind of similar to what happened to Greg Norman. This was back 26 years ago, and he's up for the Masters. And he came in to the last day, and he was 6 under par, and nobody else was close. And I don't follow golf anymore since I quit playing, but if you're that far ahead and nobody's really close, you know, I bet you're feeling pretty good about what Sunday's going to be like.
It's looking pretty good on the last day of the tourney. Yes, indeed.
Except that for Greg Norman, that day he happened to set a record which has yet to be broken as the worst collapse in Masters history. He bogeyed and he double bogeyed and he did it again. I mean, his back nine apparently was an absolute disaster.
I'll never forget that day because my wife and I were out. She's a huge estate sale fan. There's a large estate sale at a golf course, and we got there, and all anybody could talk about was Greg Norman's day. Nobody even tried to sell their stuff. It didn't even matter anymore. It's like, did you hear what happened to Greg Norman? We're like, no, but that's all anybody wanted to talk about.
Well, what's the point here on an investment show? Well, the point is, if you take stuff for granted, because I've got this big winner, I'm going to be okay. Well, those big winners collapse. Let's take Twitter, for instance.
No, there you go. Sure.
And it's not the only one. I mean, there's a number of the tech stocks which have just tanked this year. As interest rates rise, the value formula for stocks that maybe don't earn a lot of money and they certainly don't pay dividends, the math formula changes and their price comes down, and then people start selling it. And especially if the pros start dumping it, it's really disaster.
We're in trouble. Yep.
And it's kind of like our client who owned the stock and just let 30% of the profit just disappear because he wasn't paying attention. He didn't have a process for paying attention. It's not that he didn't care when he thought about it. He really did care, but he didn't have a process to deal with it. And that's kind of where MPT, Modern Portfolio Theory, is. It has a process to get you into a portfolio. And then that's it.
That's it. It's done. There's no sell side process. There's nothing that says, hey, this is really hurting us. We should get this out of our portfolio, because they're not looking at what's going on now. They're looking at, well, over the last 80 years, here's the average return that this has occurred, that has occurred. And it's like, that doesn't matter. You're not going to be invested for the next 80 years. And unless you are, that 80-year return doesn't matter to your portfolio today. You have to be able to adapt to current situations, or the market can roll over on you and just really put a big hole in your portfolio. And if you're in retirement, you don't have time for that. You can't lose 40% of your portfolio and say, well, I've got time, it'll all come back. Not the case. You've got to protect capital, and you can't do that by doing nothing in a market as dynamic as the one we're in today.
And so the guy that created what we now call modern portfolio theory. He didn't name it that himself. That's Harry Markowitz. He basically has said, the financial services industry misuses my academic work. And secondly, he says, and I would never use it to manage my own money.
Not my money. Yeah. He's like, no, not me.
But that's what the industry does. But back to Greg Norman. I mean, obviously, he learned some stuff from that day 26 years ago. But quoting him, he says, you only get out of it what you put into it. If you are a sheep in this world, you are not going to get much out of it. But he probably would have liked having spent some time with Winston Churchill, who quoting Winston Churchill, said, success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Mm. Well, that'd be true for golf. I mean, the only way you actually win is you have to play again. And what investors don't want to do in the market when they're dealing with a loss is saying, that happens. What do I do now? I don't sit around and say it'll take care of itself, because it may be a very long time or it may never take care of itself. But we are in a standardized business format that serves the purpose of the industry, not the purpose of investors.
Correct.
There is no process in modern portfolio theory to walk away from collapsing markets. And now, I mentioned this breakfast this morning, and one of the questions was, well, how do we protect my parents' accounts? I said, well, where you've been, there is no process to make any adaptation if the market falls apart. You must have a plan, a process that says, when these things happen to what I own, this is what I will do to avoid losing more capital. Now, it doesn't mean you're not going to have losses, but it does mean you have a process to rotate into strength where your probability of recovery from a loss is far greater most of the time than sitting still and just taking it.
And that's the important part, that you have to continue to apply your discipline to the market, and you can't just stop and walk away. And that happens to people. They get afraid. They say, well, that didn't work very well. Therefore, I'm just going to go to cash and sit. And you can stay there for years out of fear. We've seen it happen to investors. And that's a terrible situation, because then most likely you're going to miss whatever recovery is out there. And that's more painful than taking a short-term loss in order to get a long-term gain. And like Churchill said, if it's not working, you have to go from failure to failure without that loss of enthusiasm. You have to step back up, get back to the plate, and take the next swing and say, hey, you know what? I know, like you said, Don, this is going to give me the best probability of making money. That doesn't mean it works all the time. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but it's going to give you the best chance for success. And that's what you have to keep doing.
So we know Winston Churchill adapted to a lot of losses to become, to win the World War II. And I mean, he had help. You know, Eisenhower was helpful. There were
just
few
a
others.
Bit. Yeah, a little bit around the edges. Yeah.
But Greg Norman learned. I mean, he went on to a very successful career. I mean,
sure.
He continued to have losses, but he picked him, as the old saying goes, picked himself up by the bootstraps, and he went back and did it one more time until he figured out. And he became very successful in designing golf courses, wineries, all kinds of different stuff. So one of the things that we look at from time to time is how individual investors feel about the market.
Yes.
And that's what the questionnaire is all about. How do you feel about losing money?
Risk-return questionnaire, yeah.
How do you feel about your income level, about your needs, about your goals and stuff? Mm-hmm. None of which have anything to do with what's going on in the stock market.
Those are not market questions. Those are personal opinion questions, and that's not the way you should invest your money.
So the American Association of Individual Investors takes frequent surveys among their membership, and after dropping last week to a very depressed level as far as the bullishness is concerned, it was at 24, let's call it 25%.
Yeah.
Well, this week they updated the survey, as they do every week, and it plummeted to just a hair over 15%. Well, the last time there were fewer bullish investors in the AAII survey was in September of 92.
So you have to go a long way back to see pessimism at this level as far as investors concerning the market.
And actually, that was pretty close to the bottom of the next 2 years of a very good stock market. So emotions are almost always wrong in the market.
That's often a contrarian indicator, right? It's like everybody's negative. That means something positive may be coming around the bend, and you need to be paying attention for that. That doesn't mean it's coming. It means it could be coming. So you have to pay attention. Keep your eyes open. More importantly, keep your mind open to what you may need to do as things are coming up, and don't get locked into a particular strategy that says, well, this is what I own, and I don't care what's going on in the market. That's not a productive game to be in.
That's why you need a process.
Absolutely. The process is what will save you, because when you get nervous, when you get scared, when you get greedy, it doesn't matter if you're losing money or making money. That process is what will steady the boat and let you continue on instead of blowing you out of the water. And that's the worst possible thing that could happen, that you end your game, you end your investing, and then you have no chance of success. We are at the bottom of the hour here.
Yeah, our process is break time.
Yeah, it's break time. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter. It's the Week in Review. If you'd like to start receiving that, just send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. It's a real good look at the recent economic news that's come out, and you'll get our take on whether it's something you should be concerned about, which, of course, the talking heads are going to tell you everything's very important. It's not. Some things you can really safely ignore, and we try to get to all that stuff. So, again, you can register for that by sending an email to help@iriradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Detour. There's a muddy road ahead. Detour.
Yeah, well, there probably is a muddy road ahead. We just happen to be at the beginning of the time of the quarter where companies are reporting their earnings for last quarter. And one of the areas of focus are the big Wall Street banks, because they have a ton of money.
You bet they do.
And J.P. Morgan was the first to report, and they reported an earnings miss because they basically set aside money for loss reserves. They expect losses coming in, and they are going. They basically are saying, we're setting aside, I want to say it was $50 million. I don't remember the exact number. Billion dollars, probably. It was a big number. So they set that aside, and it's treated as a loss. That's not good news. But they don't think things are all that bad, because they set aside $30 billion to buy back their own stock, which means they don't see a lot of other stock they want to buy. In this company, J.P. Morgan Chase, that's the local bank that you see in the various grocery stores and around the corners. They collect an awful lot of data, because if you have a credit card or an account there, they have your number on virtually anything.
Literally,
you do.
Yeah.
So they are making money in their proprietary trading desk, because markets are volatile, and for traders, Bob, that is nirvana. Volatile markets, traders can make money. Stable markets, it's a lot more difficult. But the running between investor fear and emotions back and forth, I mean, then there's all sorts of uncertainty. They make money. When they look at their loan division, they're not too optimistic. They're not making a lot of money there, and they don't expect to make a lot of money. The credit card division is not making a lot of money because people have cash. They've been paying down their credit cards, and not if they're using them, they've had the ability to pay them in cash every month and not have an interest charge. So there are some things which are causing some concern for Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO over there. But there's not getting detoured bump that we use. We turn around and take a look at the stuff that's going on in the market. And we had one day last week where bonds have been oversold, and they were priced pretty attractively. And so the bond prices fell as yields fell, prices went up.
Yeah, right, there you go.
Well, that was one day. The next day, it was all reversed. Yep. Okay. So
not
how much
of a trend there. Yeah, not much of a trend to get on there.
So the trend is a little longer term, and you have to look at some of those wild days and say, what's my process? How am I going to handle this? Do I do anything with this or not? And one thing we do know in this kind of environment is that if you're looking for somebody to give you a sad story, a sad song and dance about the coming apocalypse in the stock market and in the collapse of the dollar and the death of America as a world leader,
right?
You do not have to look very far, because there is plenty of that news around. And there's plenty of guys who will charge you arm and a leg for newsletters.
And that's because, bad news sells. Bad news sells. And the market is out there. I've read it in another article. They call it online. If you're going through the online stuff, it's called doom scrolling. You're just scrolling through the doom, and it just keeps coming one after another. There's plenty of stories about everything is a disaster, everything is bad, and it's all going to, of course, get much, much worse, but way before it gets better.
So one of the things that is bad is inflation at 8.5%.
Not good, sure.
But the producer price index is over 11. That's even worse, because what happens with that? That means that those prices haven't come through the retail system yet. They're on their way.
That's not for us yet. That's right. That's still on the producer side. But those increased prices are going to come to us also. So that's why we're like, can I hang on, everybody? The inflation, we're not done with it yet. It's going to be hanging around for a little bit.
Well, it's going to be hanging around. How much higher the retail inflation gets, we don't really know.
Right.
Some of these companies that are faced with this are going to, they're going to try to pass on some of the costs. They may not be able to pass it on all. And some of them aren't going to make it. They just won't be able to cover the overhead. And that will, that'll settle some of the things down. It's a hard way to go. But we have this inflation. We have to adapt to it, and it puts a strain particularly on the lower half of households' income in the country.
Sure.
If you're in the top 25% or higher, I mean, this stuff doesn't matter. If you're in that 50 to 75 range, it's a little uncomfortable, but you're probably going to be able to make it work. If you're in the lower 50% of income, I mean, this stuff gets really tight, and you're starting to wonder, how are we going to make ends meet? And that's not good for the economy.
It's not, because the stuff that you have to buy, consumer staples, as we talked about a little earlier in the show, you don't have the option. You're going to buy gasoline. You're going to buy food. You're going to seek medical care. And all of that is getting much more expensive. And there's really not a good way to sidestep it other than you have to consume less. So it begins to affect your lifestyle right away.
Well, this is back to, there's nothing we can do to control the Fed. We can't control, certainly cannot control the policies coming out of the administration on energy.
Right.
We can't control world supply of energy. It is what it is. And that feeds through to the gas pump. And most gas station operations aren't owned by the oil companies.
Corporations, sure. Yep.
They're franchise operations. They're owned by mom and pop or smaller
at least
corporate
local
entities.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they typically make 2 to 4 cents a gallon. They are not raking in a ton of money. If you want to know where most of that money goes, it's taxes. It's not even the cost of the oil. I mean, just Olympia collects more profit from gas sales than the local distributor does, the local operator.
That's pretty depressing when you think about it.
But there's bad news forecast that West Texas Intermediate oil is going to go to $200. Mm. And you know, I've only seen that one place.
Right.
But to see it between go 125, 150, that could happen. However, it hasn't been happening in recent weeks. Prices have softened quite a bit, and they may take a little more time before they take another run up. So, but energy is an interesting deal, because if we go back to 40 years ago, to the early 80s, energy as a sector was the largest sector in the S&P 500. Today, it is the smallest sector in the S&P 500.
How's that for some rotation, huh?
Ooh, huge. So even with the recent run-ups in energy arena, most people haven't had a benefit of it because their modern portfolio theory structure doesn't put a lot of weight in a tiny sector of the market. So energy could make a really big run in price, and the related industries that work with oil have been very profitable recently. But for most people, it doesn't matter because it's such a small segment of the stock market.
They're not going to get to own it. Yeah, they're not going to get to own it. It's not going to be part of their portfolio. And so they miss. They miss the whole thing because it's based on averages. And like you said, Don, it's a really small piece of the S&P 500 now. So it gets overlooked, even though right now that's where a lot of the returns are.
And so the standard process is not dynamic. It doesn't adapt to what's actually going on in the market. It's one of the reasons we talk about it. It's one of the things that makes our process unique. When we see energy outperforming everything else, we want to increase our exposure to leadership. And that's what we do.
We're overweight energy right now in our global portfolio. That's correct.
And in dynamic. Both of them.
Yep.
Yeah, both of them are. Well, I think what we're looking at here, and not everybody wants to address this issue yet, is but we actually, in part driven by the greenies who want to do away with natural gas and oil, we are looking at the transition to a change to back to a super cycle favoring commodities, and it's going to favor oil and energy production. Why? Because you can't build a windmill without massive amounts of oil and coal. You can't build your solar panels unless you have plenty of other energy to process all that stuff. I mean, you can't generate the copper wire you need for your electronic vehicles, much less a windmill, unless you have oil and coal. And yet we're restricting the development of it, which makes those commodities more difficult to obtain, which will raise the prices of them, which will raise the price of building a windmill and generating an electric vehicle. I mean, there is a formula, I'm obviously not going to get into the math on the radio, but is a formula that says how much energy output does it take to generate the electrical output of this final product? And to switch from fossil fuel to wind and solar is a negative. That's called malinvestment, and we've been doing it for more than a decade, and we can only afford to do that for not a whole lot longer before the cost of manufacturing this other stuff gets really out of hand, which means those people who pay attention to what's going on in the tiny sector of energy and begin to rebuild its emphasis are going to be big winners.
That's true.
You can't make malinvestments for decade after decade and have it be a winning proposition.
You can't go backwards, and we're just not ready for that transition yet. At some point we will. We're not ready right now, and we really can't do it. We don't even have the electrical grid infrastructure to transmit that level of electricity, even if we could produce it, and we can't produce it. So it's going to be a little while before we get there, and we don't want to shut off oil and gas yet because we still need it in the interim, and that means, you know, a decade or so or two more before we're going to have any substantial switch. We're going to have to switch right now. It's time for our last break of the day here, Don. We're going to take a brief pause here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar on the calendar. It's for Saturday, May 7th, 9 a.m. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. We still have plenty of time to get your call on the board. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, that's true in the market, certainly true in the market, that leadership is where it's important. I'm just looking up TWTR, Twitter, which was, it was a hero for a long time. However, not so much lately. The fact that Elon Musk said, "I'll buy the company."
Right.
Did help.
Yeah, that'll help.
but even with that, since last year, January, it looks like that's probably February, it's still down 39.91%. That's a big loss. Leadership's important, and paying attention. There's an issue of, do I buy something because I use it, I believe in it, mm-hmm. and I don't care what happens to my portfolio, or maybe if it's going to drop 49% in a year, I should pay attention. Somebody should pay attention. That's our point. Somebody needs to pay attention. If you don't have a plan or a process to pay attention, the odds are your financial advisor doesn't need. He says, "No, we're watching your account." Yes. Yes. So we, you know, quarterly, we sell your winners and buy your losers, which means they're still buying Twitter. Down 49%.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Yeah, if that's in your account. We have Eric on the line from Seattle. I'm curious myself about Elon Musk. So, Eric, you're on the radio. You're talking to Puget Sound on KTTH. Oh, okay. So he's just curious about Elon Musk and Twitter.
Got it.
Well, I think one of the really funny things is that Elon Musk is an African American trying to buy this company, and the left is up in arms about it.
Well, they don't. They're just railing against someone that's going to come in and tell them, "Well, this should be a real town square. This should be free speech. You should be able to say what you want here." Barring anything illegal, and they don't like that at all. They've been able to throttle anyone except their own opinion, and so it's been a great place for them to filter everyone else's attitude and put out only their own. And Elon Musk is like, "You know what? I don't like that. I don't like what you're doing." And by, you know, he thinks they're wasting a lot of money. That's the other reason he's there. He thinks that the Twitter platform is very valuable, way more than it's producing now, and he thinks he can make it work. So that's he's not doing this just out of an altruistic free speech. He thinks there's a lot of money to be made here that Twitter is wasting, and he wants to go in and clean that up.
Well, he's a libertarian. He doesn't claim to be Republican or Democrat.
Right.
I saw part of his TED speech the other day, and he basically says he's in favor of the First Amendment, free speech. And Twitter and the other major social media have decided that they will be determining factors of whether speech is free or not.
Right.
If they don't like what you say, that it's automatically classified as profane and not possible to be aired anywhere.
And it might just be me, but that sounds a lot like Russia, doesn't it? Isn't that what happens there?
Yeah.
And
China.
You have to have the approval of the state to say things, and on Twitter, you have to have the approval of Twitter to say things. Not your opinion, only theirs. Very restrictive.
And if you ask if you've been shut down and ask why, good luck. You're not going to get an answer.
They don't have to tell you. Sure.
Anyway, let's go back to inflation. You know, inflation is putting a lot of pressure on people. And the price of gasoline is up 18% last month. Price of gas is 48% higher than a year ago.
How about that?
Which means it has 30% of it has absolutely nothing to do with Mr. Putin.
Gas prices were going up before the invasion, that's for sure.
And food prices are up, and that has actually, one of our portfolios has a position in agriculture. Food prices are going up. They're going to go up more. A good portion of the raw material that makes fertilizer comes out of Russia and Ukraine on a global basis. So fertilizer costs are rising. Farmers are saying, I can't afford that. So they do one of two things. They change crops, or they put less fertilizer on it, which means there'll be less crop at harvest time. And next year, the soil may not be as productive going the second year around.
Well, that cuts output. That increases prices. So there you go.
And then you have the administration that has said, we'll cut gasoline prices by creating more ethanol, allowing an increase in the use of ethanol. And I have said before, I don't think there's anybody in the administration that has an economics degree worth a whit, because to generate ethanol, you use corn. So basically we're saying, you're unhappy with your gasoline price, we are going to make corn more expensive so you have cheaper gasoline. Now, corn goes into feedstock. That's how you feed cattle, pork, and poultry. You have corn on your dinner table somewhere along the line. It makes corn oil. I mean, the multitude of things that come out of corn because of the industriousness of the free market in the United States has created these massive applications, and we take them for granted. The administration says, no, you don't like gas prices, we'll make your food more expensive. Now, they didn't put that in the press release, but that's the net result of the decision that looks like they're going to make. I don't think it's been finalized. Maybe somebody will call them and tell them, you guys haven't thought this one through either.
Once again, yeah.
Once again, yeah.
It's so a long list, I think. The list is getting longer.
How do you adapt to 8.5% inflation? I mean, this can cause a brain freeze.
Well, there's so many people that have not seen anything like that in their lifetime, nothing approaching that. Inflation's been largely quite tame. And then for the last decade, the Fed's been trying to get inflation up a bit. And now, because of other things happening in the economy and on Earth, inflation has just ratcheted up like crazy. And people are not used to that. We're not used to seeing that, especially in the United States.
So with this rising cost of gas, I mean, I've thought about the last time we had this kind of problem, which was back in the 70s. And at the time, I lived in Mercer Island. And I remember walking from downtown Mercer Island to my house, which, you know, it's about a mile at the time, and I'm out on a Saturday. And the cars are lined up at the gas station because you could only buy 5 gallons at a time.
If you had enough gas to get there, yeah.
Right. So this is an environment, unless you're a baby boomer, most everybody else has no idea of how invasive this whole process is, and it hasn't caught up with everything yet. So we trim spending in areas where we say, well, we don't really have to do that. I'm not going to go out as often. I'm not going to go to a high-end restaurant. I'm going to go to something where I won't have to spend quite so much money. And it takes a great deal of time for things to get back to the way they were. And part of that may not happen. I mean, one of the articles I've read this week is that it looks like the Fed is about to change their target inflation rate from 2% to 4% and say that's normal. Well, let me tell you, folks, a 4% inflation year after year after year is disastrous. That's how you turn a great country into a second-class country.
And the Fed, of course, is window dressing. They're trying to make the inflation rate not look as bad. So they're going to say, well, let's say 4% is normal now, which is double their normal 2% range. Let's say 4% is normal. And so now we're halfway to, we're only halfway above normal now. So it makes it look better, but it doesn't change the fact that inflation is really steep right now. It may not be done going up, and it looks like it's going to last for a little while. So those are important things to keep in mind, and don't get surprised by it. That's probably that's the most likely outcome from where we are.
So one of the things that people have to will be learning to do, you know, the younger generations, is they're going to be paying attention to price tags, and they're going to be reading labels and finding out that the bottle looks the same, but the quantity is smaller, and the price, it's only a dime more expensive, but they just cut 10% out of the volume. Anyway, we are about out of time.
Coming up,
the live radio show is about ready to go unlive. You want to watch us on Saturday, May 7th, in our live webinar where we're going to update what's going on in the market and all the stuff that we look at. Register at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. You want to talk to us during the week? We also have a phone number for that. It's 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119, or you can email us, help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Use that if you aren't getting our weekend review, which goes out on most Mondays, and we'll be glad to add you to the list. But we are out of time here. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless the United States of America. And Lord willing, we'll be back with you next Saturday. You have a great weekend.